Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN, F-U-N. Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Big Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, I do not understand why the Knicks are letting you join them.
It's a tough question to answer after all the good times, but I think it's just time for me to move on.
Everyone knows you will be Phil Jackson's right-hand man.
Kobe and Magic, not so happy today.
That's weird because they've always been so supportive of the Lakers' decisions. So that's just it's a weird dynamic for these two to have. I can't remember a single instance, you know, other than the Mike D'Antoni signing, you know, and then there was not trading Andrew Bynum for Jason Kidd and, you know, letting Phil Jackson go and not bringing him back. Other than those instances, I can't think of a single time Magic and Kobe have been unhappy with the Lakers.
And the Garnett thing, don't forget that.
Oh, right, the Garnett thing, yep, okay.
That's also there. It's interesting. I do find it fascinating because the Lakers organization is really good at managing the media, because what happens is stuff gets leaked and it's always pretty bad. And then since Jim Buss took over, essentially, and then they do a really good job of feeding to reporters to damage control that and be like, either no, like, look how much Kobe trusts the organization, or look how much things have turned around, or they deserve more credit. And then you just keep hearing more and more stuff and you're like, Jim Buss is a problem. Like,
yeah, how much of that is is it just a lack of respect for him? Because you're right, like, this stuff did not happen when Jerry Buss was alive and running the show. I mean, it didn't. Like, they really didn't have any problems. If
this
you think about
feels
it. Like,
really
they didn't have problems for 30 years.
This story feels really familiar to me. Like, the son takes over a business, wants to be his own man, wants to set his own course, makes drastic changes to the organization.
I don't.
And everyone goes, but you were so successful before. It's not unheard of to hear, I can't name this in certain company, but there's a company that my dad worked for that had this exact situation happen where the guy was like a patriarch and like a legend in the business. And what wound up happening is the son took over and completely jacked it up. And, you know, I understand he wants to make his own decisions, but it was interesting from the very get-go when he basically booted Phil out. Was like, well, it's been great. And Phil's like, well, I might not be done yet. I know, it's been so good. This has been such a great time.
It's been great having you, but we haven't even had dinner yet. No, I mean, it's late. You've got to get going. It's 6:30. Yeah, it's great seeing you, buddy.
So there's a lot of that. That was the situation with Phil initially, and then the new one, the second one, when they hired D'Antoni, that's a really fascinating one, because I've heard the same it's been written about. Four different reporters with insight have written the same thing, which is essentially it was done, it was going to happen, and then Jim Buss basically flipped the switch at the last second, called Phil in the middle of the night and was like, nope, not so much, thanks, bye, and hired D'Antoni in the middle of the night.
Is it because Phil's with his sister? Is there some – I mean, what's going on here?
I always wonder what Thanksgiving is like. That's been my question this whole time.
Right. That's got to be weird.
Hey, guy who's sleeping with my sister that I fired?
They're married or engaged or something. They're at least engaged.
They are.
I think at a certain point, maybe you don't want it to be too much of a family affair, even though the family runs the Lakers already. I really don't get it.
And in the middle of all this is Mitch Kupchak, who continues to be like the most divisive – no, not the most divisive, the most quietly controversial, I think, GM in the league, in that every 5 years we re-examine him and the story completely flipped. Like, I was reading back – I was doing a story. I looked back, and in 2006, Kelly Dwyer, the fantastic writer at Yahoo Sports, put Kupchak as number one on one of the – or I think he was like number two or three on the worst GMs in the league list, because this is during like the 2006 stretch when it was like a total disaster.
Right.
And there was like no hope. And then obviously they landed Powell and everything turns around. And so 2 years later, the story is, oh, look at the job Mitch Kupchak has done. Just builds championship teams. What a fantastic GM. And then now we're in 2014, and the story is, so Mitch Kupchak signed Chris Kamen and Nick Young to be competitive. But there's always caveats where it's like, well, the injuries. Well, if the injuries hadn't happened, then things would be different. Well, if this had happened, if Dwight had gotten along better, if Dwight had been healthy, like all these things go along and tell a different story. And I honestly don't know, because I go back and forth on it. I'm like, Mitch Kupchak, I'm like, well, he's like the Dwight Howard, Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol team should have worked. It's not his fault it didn't. I don't know what he could have done. What are you going to say? No, thank you. We'll pass on Dwight Howard. Thanks, but no.
Right. I mean, he made the right moves. The coaching thing was just a complete bungle.
Yeah.
It was. Like, that was something where it's, all right, you've screwed up this aspect. But in terms of putting that team together last year, he didn't do a bad job. Like, whether you think they were title contenders or not, after we saw them together for a little bit, that's one thing. But, like, that is a team that was decimated by injuries, and that's why they were so comically, you know, inept. Now, if they had been healthy, are they a title contender based off what we saw? Probably not. But it doesn't mean they would have been a laughingstock for half the year.
Hard to contend when you want to kill your teammates?
Yeah, that can be good, both good or bad.
Yeah. A healthy tension is good.
Yeah.
But I also thought it was funny because, you know, they had that picture last year with Kobe and Dwight fake fighting, and everyone's like, ha, 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 we're going to make fun of all these stories. And then immediately afterwards, the stories come out. Yeah, Dwight definitely wanted Kobe amnesty. Kobe pretty much condescended to him in the meeting.
My favorite part of that picture was Mike D'Antoni being the weird uncle that doesn't quite get the joke.
Right.
In the middle of it. He's like, oh, what's going on? It's like, Mike, just get out of there.
And then the D'Antoni situation is also really interesting. I mean, you and I talked about this at the time. I didn't want him to take the job because I was like, well, you're on knee surgery and you need to go take a bad team and make them good, not take a great team and try and be a superstar manager. We're seeing this a lot, right, where guys who should be good coaches can't manage the superstar teams. I think it's fair to kind of start going, on some of these.
Yeah, I think it's – I almost wonder if it's easier to be someone like Eric Spoelstra.
Yeah.
Where you've come through the organization from the start, and that gives you a certain amount of credit to where, you know, you're as big a part of that organization as any player. It's just in a different way, right? Like, you're not going to have power if LeBron James wants you out. Like, you're not going to have that power, but you do have the trust because you've been working your way up, and everyone has seen you work your ass off and work your way up for years. And I almost wonder if it's easier to be that kind of a coach, if it's easier to be a Scott Brooks, like more of an unknown, than to be a big name to come battle other big names, because there's so much more ego involved.
I think Spoelstra's best thing is that he never tried to get I honestly don't believe he ever tried to get LeBron to like him.
Right.
I think he didn't try and bully him. He didn't try and set the tone. He came in and was like, well, you get to do whatever you want because you're LeBron James. I'm just going to do my job to the best of my ability and we'll see what happens.
Right.
That's like the perfect way to go about it. So this report came out yesterday that – we'll get back to Magic in a second. The report came out yesterday from Sporting News, and this one confused the hell out of me.
I was very confused as well. Like, I just saw it right as in our little campfire chat that Royce was like, oh, I'll get this. And it was just as I had just seen the tweet. I was like, that's a weird story to come out of nowhere.
So the story is that he has, quote, no interest in bringing back Mike D'Antoni next year, in playing for D'Antoni next year.
Right.
And this is a guy who he's known since he was a kid. Like, they have this long-standing relationship. I know this sounds like a very simple thing, but it's just an example. They both have the Italian background. Kobe's never been anything but supportive of Mike. He's never been anything but supportive of Mike. While Powell has constantly popped off and questioned every single thing about him, Kobe's never said a thing.
Right.
And now he wants him gone. What happened in the last 2 weeks? How does this team go from, you know what, it's been a tough year, we've had a lot of injuries, but you watch out because next year we're gonna be better and we're going to be ready to get back in this thing. We're going to be dangerous next year. What happened from that to everything must change now?
I've tried to Kobe's existence this season has been really weird because he hasn't been on the court, right? Like, he played six games, and it wasn't even six games. Like, it's been a weird thing, and we talked about this a little bit, but in terms of him, like, he still exists in the NBA, and he's still one of the two most polarizing figures. Like, it's him and LeBron James, right? Like, right. even Kobe near the end of his career, it's between these two for, like, the most polarizing figures in the NBA, or maybe three if you want to, you know, throw David Stern in there before he stepped aside. But, like, regardless of where Kobe is on or off the court, he's still a huge part of this league, and yet he hasn't been allowed to exist on the court, which makes him an off-the-court figure. And I'm a little surprised that because he's so willing to speak his mind that we haven't had more comments like this. Not that, oh, I'm not playing for... I mean, it's not even a comment. It's a source. But there's no chance he's playing for Mike D'Antoni next year. I'm kind of surprised he's not as vocal in the future of this organization.
And that's what kind of changed yesterday, because he said also... after, you know, that report came out and he did the comment about Phil, which is, I don't get that, you know, how the Knicks could get him and the Lakers wouldn't bring him back.
Right.
He then basically goes off and he says, Jeannie and Jim need to get this thing together, which that's the elephant in the room, is that there's a lot. Everyone I talk to with ties to LA, just reporters and people that are around the situation, are all like, Jeannie should really probably be a bigger part of this, which I don't know if that's fair. Like, she doesn't have necessarily basketball experience.
She has the business experience, but she seems to understand the business side of it to the extent that I think she would kind of get out of the way of the basketball side.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is she seems to very much take like the very obvious.
And she seems approach. To have. I don't know if it's because, and I don't mean this pejoratively. I don't know if it's because she's a woman, but she seems to command a lot more respect around the NBA than Jim Buss has in his, you know, few years kind of in the spotlight.
Yeah, everyone loves her. Everyone speaks really highly of her.
Right.
And you feel like if she was in charge, it would just be like, okay, Mike, thanks, so long, Phil, you're in charge, who do you want to hire?
Right.
Done. You know, and working for Phil Jackson and coaching Kobe Bryant, that's all of a sudden a really easy job to get anybody to take. Not that the Lakers is a hard job to get somebody to find, but if Phil wanted to, we could say, hey, Brian Shaw, and the Nuggets would be like, we need like a second rounder, and it'd be done.
Right.
You know, if you wanted to hire Kerr, which I think is actually a really good choice, by the way. If he ends up hiring Kerr, I think that's a really good call.
It would be fun to see Zach Lowe as a front office executive. Because you know Steve Kerr's bringing him in.
I can't even deal with that situation. I've known Zach too long. I think this whole thing with LA is really weird. I mean, Magic Johnson popping off isn't anything new. He's been on this kick for a while, which I've also thought was very strange, because it's. I'm just trying to imagine a scenario in which, you know, before it'd been like if a friend of my dad's was criticizing me, but now I'm trying to think of it in like when my son grows up. If there was somebody that partied with me and then criticized my son, I'm trying to understand how that would work, because that's the deal is. Magic and Bust used to party like hardcore,
right?
And now he's you know, he's always been so supportive of the organization, but he really does not like Jim Bust. Like, it's time to just go ahead and get this out there. Like, Magic Johnson does not like that guy.
It seems pretty clear.
And you know, but him popping off is one thing. He's been doing this for a while. Like, he doesn't like Mike D'Antoni because of the whole offense thing, and that's, you know, that's fine. I think it's hard to argue. The problem is the injuries cover it, but it's also hard to look at this team and look at a 48-point loss to the Clippers and go, yeah, Mike D'Antoni's doing a great job. Like,
right.
I'm big on Mike D'Antoni. Everything he says about that team working on defense has to be a lie. It just has to be.
Yeah,
Either that or he's the worst defensive coach ever.
I do think he has done an admirable job this year coaching the team. He's gotten, you know, stuff out of certain players who aren't any good, but that doesn't mean he's done a good job. Even with the circumstances of the injuries and all the crap that he was given to work with, like, it's been admirable. It's been a good effort, but I don't know that it's been a good job.
I think he's done a fantastic job coaching the players. I think he's done a poor job coaching the team. That's how I would describe it.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I agree with that.
Because he gets more – and this is why, again, I got to hammer this again – Mike, I know you're listening. He's not listening. Please, when they fire you, take a year off and enjoy the money. Go coach a bad team and bring the players up. Go do that. Steve Clifford has done a fantastic job with the Bobcats. I'm going to hammer this again. They would be so good with Mike D'Antoni. Such a good fit.
Ooh, co-coaches.
There you go. Offense, defense.
Offense, defense.
And then Kemba Walker gets him fired.
That seems...
Al Jefferson gets him fired?
No, Al's too nice. Not that Kemba's not nice, but I don't see Al getting anybody fired.
I'll tell you, if Washington lets go of their coach, this is a tangent, but that job's going to become real attractive real quick.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guys that fit. George Karl would do well there.
Mike, I think it's one of the best coaching jobs you can have.
Yeah.
I really do.
Like, superstar, good roster, owner wants to win. Decent market.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, there was – okay, so it is – I will say this is kind of interesting that midway through the Phil conversation, Adrian Wojnarowski pops in and says, not sold that this is done yet. This could be Phil angling for the, to try and get the Lakers to make one more push out of them.
Right.
A week later, Magic Johnson tweets this, and Kobe Bryant pops off to the media.
Yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to be done, but I haven't seen a press release.
I think the press release was J.R. Smith saying he was excited to work with the Zen Master. I think that's the official Knicks press release. Because once J.R. Smith tweets it, then you know it's true.
I'm trying to imagine his tweets going across the ticker on Times Square. Trying to get the pipe. Breaking. Yeah, I don't know, man. Lakers, it seems like a really weird situation. The debate over whether or not they're going to be good is also becoming really polarizing because there's the idea of, well, if they get healthy and they add some pieces, they're going to, you know, they're still going to have all this cap room. And I keep being like, you still got 20 mil tied up, chunk.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something where it works if they grab Carmelo this summer and then you find a way to get a third guy next summer, and then you're in a position to grab a third guy, you know, the summer after that when Kobe's up. Like, maybe
or Magnum is the guy.
Yeah, right. If the guy they grab in the draft is the guy, but I guess there's a progression. But I don't see any scenario where 2015 it's like boom, they're back.
It's interesting to think, you know, because they were bad through the late '90s, and then drafted Kobe, got Shaq. All of a sudden, everything like changes. Things change with them very quickly, good and bad. They go to pot real quickly, and they get better quickly.
Right. Maybe that's what it's going to take.
We got news and notes today?
We do, and they're brought to you by Squarespace.com.
LaMarcus Aldridge out 2 games with a back contusion. It looked a lot worse than that.
Oh,
that
man.
Already fractured his hip.
Yeah, it looked – I mean, he took a – and just kind of a freak play. Like, Aaron Baines barely fouled him. You know, he was just kind of in the way. He just landed – he hit Baines and then started landing weird and right on his tailbone, had to be carried off. There were reports after the game that he wasn't even walking. They had him in a wheelchair. The fact that it's just a back contusion, it's 2 games, is really, really fortunate.
And Mo Williams is out 2 weeks with, I think, a hip strain.
I think it's an interesting question for this Portland team of, how successful have they been in remaking the bench? Because they don't have a lot of bench production, but they also don't play a lot of bench minutes. You know, like going into the season and then with the early success, we were like, oh my God, look what Neil O'Shea did with the bench. It's so great. But their starters are still playing a ton of minutes. I think it's just I guess they have the option now to not wear their starters out, but I don't think they're really doing it. I don't know if the bench has been that good when it is in. They've had moments, but I do think it's kind of like maybe time to circle back and see what has been good about this Portland team. I mean, maybe they have just enough support to where they don't feel like they have to overtax their guys. They no longer have J.J. Hickson playing center, but I don't know. It's a weird way to evaluate their bench this year because it's no longer bad, but I'm not sure how good it is, if that makes sense. And regardless, the team is successful, so maybe that doesn't matter.
They're 9-13 since the "see you in the finals" comment to the Pacers, their Twitter account, that game. So the game against the Pacers.
The classic Twitter curse.
The classic Twitter curse. That's courtesy of Ben Golliver from SI.com. They are 9-11 in their last 20. LaMarcus is out 2 games. Mo Williams is out 2 weeks. How bad do you think this gets for them?
Maybe they slide to... I can't imagine them sliding past 6.
It would be catastrophic if so.
Yeah. I mean, what? They're not that far off, right? I just don't feel like... I mean, they're 3.5 ahead of Memphis for 7th.
And Dallas.
And Dallas, yeah. They're both tied. Could they fall 3.5 games? That just doesn't seem likely to me.
I could see it happening, but I think they'd have to build back up at some point. Like, I could see them lose. The problem is Memphis Memphis, I think, more so than Dallas. Dallas is kind of starting to stumble a little bit. Memphis right now is definitely in the – they're believing again, and that this team is just exceptionally dangerous. They think they can win every single game.
Yeah, it's weird. If you think about it, other than that stretch where Marc Gasol was out, like, this is a pretty damn good team still.
They have kicked ass. They have just kicked ass in the new year.
They are pretty damn good.
And so it's a really interesting question of, I think for Portland, I think they still wind up no worse than 6. I can't see them falling.
I really, there's just not that many games left.
And I'm not sure Golden State is going to go on a run. They've been playing really well. They're 7-3 in their last 10. They've played really well. But the problem is, if everyone in the West is playing well at the same time.
Yeah, we've got two different teams with at least an 8-game winning streak. Yeah. And we've got a bunch of teams that are like 7 out of their last 10. Like, the West is playing really well.
Now you can argue like Portland has not played well, but they're still 500 in their last 10. If Portland can just survive, if they make it another, they gotta get to, I think, the end of the month. If they can get to April 1st and they're still in the 5, I think they're okay there.
Yeah, I think they'll be okay. It really depends on. All right, Aldridge is out 2 games, and then what? Like, is he just back to being LaMarcus Aldridge? Is he going to be? You know, is there an adjustment period? Like, how severe is this injury even past the 2 missed games?
Well, and the problem is he hasn't been the same guy for really a month and a half.
Yeah,
his shot's been off.
Yeah,
it's been. He looks tired. He looks worn out, and that was before this. And part of that, you know, you do wonder with you mentioned the minutes. Like, you wonder how much of that's the minutes. Is he getting tired because of the load he's having to carry? You know, that's a bit. I always say, like, bench depth doesn't matter in the playoffs, but it matters a whole lot in resting your starters to get them ready for the playoffs.
Yeah, it's that whole San Antonio Spurs model, right?
Right.
You manage the minutes, especially as the season, you know, kind of trims down, and then you're ready to go in the playoffs. And especially for these newer teams who are trying to establish themselves, I wonder how much they even care about that, or is it just about, we need to get ourselves in the best position for the playoffs, and then we'll figure out, you know, the stuff like rest and all that.
So who becomes backup point guard for Portland now?
It's got to be Earl Watson, right? I mean, I love CJ McCollum, and I'd love him to get more of a role, but Earl is that veteran presence.
What about Will Barton?
As a point guard?
He can do it.
I mean, I can do it. That doesn't mean it's a good decision.
35% from 3, 48% from the field.
Yes, he can shoot. Can he run a team?
Maybe not.
I like him as the backup shooting guard. Let's do that.
You know, we're talking about the playoffs. I really want the playoffs to be what they are right now. These are the matchups in the West that I want exactly. You've got Dallas, San Antonio, which I will always enjoy Dirk versus Duncan. I will never not enjoy that.
Yes. I would rather have San Antonio, Memphis, but I'm fine with San Antonio.
Because Dallas. You like my tears?
I just like the matchup.
You want me to cry blood? Is that?
It's two very different styles. I like the kind of mismatch.
2011 was a lot of fun, and it was just a lot of fun. It was the most fun I've ever had watching. No, it's the most fun I've had watching the NBA since I was a kid. But last year was fun covering that team, and it was like, you know, I was a professional and I was working and all that. But from terms of a fandom, God, that was painful. It was just like, oh, they are so outclassed. Oh, this is just, you are just not even nearly as good as this other team.
You know how you outclass the competition online? Squarespace.com.
Nice.
They're constantly improving their platform to help you build your own professional website or online portfolio, new features, new designs, even better support. That is how you outclass the competition.
Which is ironic because of the Care Bear Layer thing. But no, like, they've got all the support, which is what Memphis needed last year. They needed a whole lot of support on the perimeter to try and knock down a single shot. But they've got this amazing support team, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, over 100 employees on the care team, based in New York City. Their office has been nicknamed the Care Bear Lair.
And they're all making the extra pass to get you that perimeter help, unlike the Grizzlies, who just couldn't get it.
And it just starts at $8 a month, which is a lot cheaper than the Grizzlies at this point with all the money that they've shelled out.
That is. You're not going to pay the luxury tax at $8 a month, and you get a free domain name if you sign up for a year.
You also get a unique mobile experience. It's going to be – it matches the style that you choose. So it's not going to be just a bland, generic mobile page. You're going to get something that's going to look like your site. It's going to feel like your site, but custom built for the mobile experience. And so it's going to look great on every device every single time.
Absolutely. You can start a free trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. If you decide to go sign up for Squarespace, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports. Enter FUN as the offer code. You get 10% off. You get to show your support for the Iron Basketball Podcast, which thanks Squarespace for their support of the Iron Basketball Podcast, because it's everything you need to create an exceptional website.
I want the Clippers-Warriors matchup.
Yes. I absolutely want this.
The non-rivalry.
The non-rivalry.
Maybe after those two teams get into a 10-player brawl, they'll call it a rivalry.
Yeah.
It was a fun game. I watched that one this morning.
It's funny. It was funny kind of watching both of those fan bases tweet last night, because the Clippers fan base was like, David Lee's kind of a sneaky, dirty player. And then watching the Warriors fan base is like, yep, he certainly is. I don't think either fan base likes David Lee.
Which, he was kind of productive at spots until the lineup changes kind of started messing with him. The lineup shifts that both those teams can use are really fascinating. They've got a lot of different looks they can throw at one another. I think that's one of the things that will be really cool about that series, is it's two coaches that are willing to try different combinations of guys to try and get the other team off kilt.
You know, they might already have the guy on the roster that they just need him to step up. Maybe that's Harrison Barnes. Maybe it's Steve Blake. Maybe it's Jordan Crawford. But ironically enough, it feels like the Warriors need another shooter. I honestly feel that way. I feel like they need one more shooter out there to really be effective on offense. Like, their offense is good, but it's not anything special. And it felt special last year.
Isn't a lot of that, though, because they've gotten to so much isolation?
Oh, my God. So, like, I hope this is an Eric Spoelstra-type thing with them where you're just not showing your hand for the postseason.
Yeah.
And so it's just a lot of Klay Thompson isolation. It's a lot of David Lee isolation post-ups. And that's when they just ruin their flow. And it's not the best product out there.
My thing is, I feel like a lot of it for them is they played great basketball and sound basketball to create open looks in the playoffs last year, but then they got hot, and so they just started launching, and it worked. And I feel like they go back to that a lot, trying to be like, all right, well, let's just have confidence and shoot. And it's like, well, no.
Yeah,
try and create something high percentage first, and then, you know, get on a roll.
That's a great point, because it feels like they're skipping the process of how they got hot, and they're just hoping they're hot.
Yeah, well, and Jackson talked a lot about at home their problems has been that they expect the crowd to do it for them.
I think that's one of the reasons they're not that special of a home team.
Yeah. Special, I think, is a good word for them. Like, they're a definitively good team.
Yeah.
We expected them to be special this year.
And they're not. They're just not
special. That's how I feel about Brooklyn, too. Even after that win last night, I'm very much like, no, they're a good team. They really are. They've managed to make this into a good team. They're not a special team.
Right.
I don't – you know, and it's been funny watching Nets fans crawl out of the basement and start to get a little bit of swagger back.
Yeah,
start to feel like, hey.
They should until the second round.
Yeah.
And then it's that time. Oh, you and I both watch, and there's a podcast episode of this. You're going to have some great pieces on it. There's a CBS documentary about Summer League called Summer Dreams. It's March 15th on CBS, 8 o'clock. It's after a full day of college basketball on CBS. I definitely recommend it. You and I both watched it. There's a scene where one of the figures they follow for Summer League is Lauren Holtkamp, who is someone who's trying to become the third full-time female referee in the NBA. And there was a quick scene where she was doing a Brooklyn Nets game, and Kevin Garnett asked her name, or something like that, and you can see like the subtitles, and as soon as like it's a very quick little snippet of her on the court, but when you see that it's Kevin Garnett talking to her, I legitimately got afraid. I was legitimately scared of what was going to come out of his mouth, just as a knee-jerk reaction, not realizing like this is on CBS, like there's not going to be anything awful that they like. There's not going to be any awful language or something like that that they're going to put out there. But there was just, you mentioned Brooklyn, so it popped into my head. Like there was a moment of panic in my mind of, oh my god, I've got to hit the dump button, even though it's not a thing when you're watching a finished product.
I don't know. You know, the networks have had to get more graphic since cable's taken over. Hannibal's on television. He could have eaten her.
That's true. We haven't seen the deleted scenes.
Exactly. Do we know she's alive?
I haven't seen her in a while.
Yeah, that's special, really. And I know that you guys, like, Zach and I make a lot of comments about being company men and doing the whole thing. Dead serious. This is a fantastic piece of work. It's just tremendous. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot of really emotional moments. It shows you a side of the business of the league that I think gets missed a lot. The personal side of it gets. Yeah. You know, we talk about it's all numbers and performance and what goes on the court when you're watching on television, and this shows you really the people that are involved, and it's a really great reminder. It's just a good story, even beyond basketball. It's just a really great story.
Yeah, I'm not ashamed of this or anything. Like, there's a scene very early on with this player, Dwayne Davis, who was an unknown. Like, I didn't even know he was in the draft. Like, you and I are huge basketball nerds. I had no idea this guy existed, and I was at Summer League where he played. Still had no idea that he was a thing, but he has a very touching story, and like. Definitely teared up as he was telling the story. Like, there's some very humanizing aspects of the documentary. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff.
Yeah.
The Warriors, you said they needed another shooter. Iguodala is supposed to be that guy, and he's shot well periodically.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't really shot all that well since the injury, right? I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know before he was like a 65% spot up shooter. I'm guessing he's not a 65% spot-up shooter anymore.
Probably not.
I feel like that would be a thing.
Steve Blake?
Yeah, and maybe Blake's that guy. Because Blake has been pretty good from three the last few years, right?
And then Jordan Crawford.
Yeah. Shooting 30% with the Grizzlies, or with the Warriors from three.
Did you watch the other game than the game before, though?
Oh, my God. Renaissance.
He threw that one up off the desperation pass where he just tossed it up and it went in. And it was just like.
Yeah, that was when you tweeted me, you need to stop what you're doing and go home and watch this game.
Yep. Abandon whatever it is that you're doing. What else happened last night?
I felt like there was some pretty. I had an enjoyable time watching basketball, like covering games last night. I felt like it was good, but now I don't remember anything that happened.
Oh, we should probably talk about Nash.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about Nash.
Let me just pour one out.
Done for the year, officially.
Done for the year, and it's nothing uncommon. I don't think it's really fair or nice or kind or considerate, but fans are obviously tweeting, you need to retire now. Why won't you retire? Because they want the cap space, right? He fired back at his critics a little bit today. It just sucks. It just sucks. And I think, you want to know who I blame for all this?
Uh-oh.
I blame Steve Kerr.
Oh.
That's who I blame. I really do blame Steve Kerr.
That's a hot sports blame.
Mm-hmm. That's a hot sports blame right now. And I think Steve Kerr is fantastic. I love his work. The way that he conducts himself as both as a player, as an executive, as a media personality, as a guy around basketball, he's fantastic. That move for Shaq remains one of the – I just cannot get past how much that screwed up one of the greatest – collections of guys, and you talk about, well, they were all offense. That team could play defense too. They had a model there. And if you were going to move Marion, they should have found a better solution than Shaq. Bringing Shaq in and wanting to slow the ball down, that changed everything. That messed up that team. That started the slide, and then he winds up knowing that he's got to leave because the Suns are going nowhere. Sign and trade to LA, and then all this disaster happens to him because he leaves the Suns training staff. I mean, that was where it started. Should have been better for Nash.
It was a thing where. And I know Ethan and I have talked about this. I'm sure you and I have it as well. But it was a moment of look at, well, basketball used to be this way. Let's do that, right? And really, like, they had a thing going. Like, they didn't win any titles, but that Suns team had a thing going where they were ahead of the curve in terms of how the style of the NBA was being established, right? Because what they did then is what a lot of successful teams do now. And it was one of those, like, inside the NBA, Charles Barkley, Kenny Smith, Shaquille O'Neal talks of, like, this is what you have to do as a player because this is how the NBA was when we played it. But it's not. It's just not that anymore. And it's not that for good reasons. Like, the game has evolved, and that was a moment of regressing to try to find success.
2007, I'm totally fine with any argument that the Spurs still would have won the series. I'm fine with the idea that everything that happened was legal and is what should have occurred, and there was nothing, you know, bulky or shaky about it, or it wasn't unfair or anything like that. I'm fine. But if Steve Nash dribbles around at Robert Horry instead of getting hip checked, if he dodges at the last second, if Horry decides not to provide that hip check and everything doesn't happen, because of the momentum, the way I remember that series, I strongly feel the Suns would have won that series. They would have annihilated the Jazz in the conference finals, and they would have beaten the crap out of the Cavaliers. They would have won that title. Yeah. They really would have won that title. Like, the gap between San Antonio, Phoenix, Dallas, and the rest of the league was so huge that year.
Because what was that? Did that happen in Game 4?
I think so.
Yeah, because they were fouling, right?
Yeah.
To extend the game. Phoenix won that game by 6.
No, I think it was already over. He was dribbling at the clock, and Morey just clocked him.
Checked him, yeah. And then, yeah, they lost Game 5 by 3. They lost Game 6 by 8. That was a pretty close series.
Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument that San Antonio still would have won, and I can't refute it other than to say the Suns were awesome. That's my only argument. But the momentum, I remember watching and feeling like, despite the fact that it was 2-2, that the Suns had the momentum coming out of that game, and they would have carried it.
This is a very small sample size, but in that series, Steve Nash averaged 21 points, 12 assists, shot 52% from three.
Yep.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it kills me how much what he's fallen to. It's the same way with Amari, and it's less so because KG's a better player than both those guys. But watching these guys get older and seeing younger fans, like, kind of make jokes and, like, it's like you just want to be like, do you understand how good he was?
Yeah, seeing Amari up close within the last, what was it, must have been within the last week or so, whenever the Knicks were here, there was a moment where I was watching him warm up. I was like, you were just awesome. Like, you were an awesome player. And it is something that even I forget at times, like, how good he was. Like, I was never an Amari guy, but looking back at, like, the numbers and some of his highlights and stuff, like, he was a force of nature.
He was – you could beat the Suns. You couldn't stop Amari.
Yeah.
That's where he was for that stretch between 2000 and about when he wasn't injured, from 2005 to 2009. He was just unbelievable. Real quick, just I want to make sure we get this in. You asked about Iguodala?
Yes.
Guarded, he's shooting 29% on the year.
Not ideal.
Unguarded, he's shooting 53% from the field.
Oh, okay.
So on catch and shoot shots, he's shooting 53% via synergy on 27 or on 30 of 57 shots.
Okay.
So get him open.
Get him open, and he can shoot.
But yeah, so Nash is done. There's questions about whether or not he's going to be able to do it, whether he's going to be able to come back or not. He's admitted he doesn't know if he's going to be able to play. He's planning on coming back next year. We'll see what happens. It just sucks. It's just
fun. I mean, he's clearly not going to go out on top, but I do hope he decides – however he ends his career, I hope it is on his terms. Whether he decides he's not going to play next year, whether he can play next year, even if he's not that good, I do want him to feel more at peace, or as at peace as possible with the ending of his career.
Jeff Schwartz wrote an op-ed for ESPN.com, wherein the NBA star agent to the stars, including Kevin Love,
Blake Griffin,
and Darren Williams, and Paul Pierce, said that the NBPA's search for an executive director is a complete joke and a sham mockery, which it is.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And then, in an odd twist, very selflessly, I might add.
Can I guess? Did he ask for, like, an outside entity to come in and run the organization?
An objective
person? Like, someone who has no prior history with the organization. Just someone who would be very good at the job and can be seamlessly introduced and would have no benefit from doing this other than a nice salary and a job well done?
Close.
Okay.
That's close. No, he thinks that agents should be way more involved in the process.
Well, I never.
I wrote both sides of it in the piece I wrote up. I wrote both sides because there's an argument to be made that basically, I will say this, agents are better qualified to represent the player's interests in the short term and in these negotiations than the players are, because the players are simply not willing or able to commit themselves to the level that they need to.
I mean, you and I have talked to enough players about the union issues going on, especially during the Billy Hunter stuff. Like, there are quite a few guys that had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys that were just completely confused by the entire process. So I think that having another I think it's good to have an outside person, and I think the agents do – the agents are definitely involved, and there is a personal side of these relationships. Like, they do – these guys are – some of these situations in which it's client, you know, client agent, it is a friendship. You get to be friends with them, and they do take care of them. And some of the good agents and really watch out for these guys' best interests.
Yeah, and to be fair, I've heard that Jeff Schwartz is like one of the best agents to have, not just because he's successful and has stars, but like he does treat his clients really well.
I guess from just a like regardless of whether you believe agents will have the best interest long term of the players or not in these situations, here's one thing. If you're a basketball fan, pray this does not happen. You better pray that the agents do not get in that room. If the agents get in that room, it is going to be a lockout for a long ass time because they have the money to survive.
Yep.
Like, they will tell them, we need to stay strong. Do you want it? And then they know how to get the players too. Like, that's their job, right? Is to communicate with players.
Literally, that's their job. Yeah.
So
their job is literally to communicate with players and get the most money for them they can.
Yeah. And they'll be able to convince them of, you need to not back down from these guys. We need to make a stand. We need to stand strong. We need to hold out. We're not going to take this. And they'll set definitive lines. And the problem is, I don't think you can look at, as powerful as the agents are in this industry, I don't think you can look at them and look at the comparative power of the NBA owners and say that they have any shot. You're talking about millionaires versus billionaires.
Yeah, and millionaires can survive for quite a long time, but ultimately they're not going to win that battle, and you'll just end up losing a lot of time, a lot of fans, and yeah, that could get really ugly.
Now, I don't think necessarily that they should just cave.
No.
That's a good idea, but what you honestly need is you need a figure that's going to be powerful enough to be able to marshal the players, and realistically the biggest thing is you need players to get off their asses and be more involved.
Hoop idea, Bill Clinton.
I had the same thought. I just thought that same thing.
How good would he be? And he'd be back in our lives.
He's pro-union.
We'd get to talk to him, you and I.
I'm from Arkansas, so I would faint if that happened. I would be comatose. I would be catatonic if that occurred. I would just stare, mouth agape. So, I don't know. I mean, look, we're going to have a lockout. It just matters how long it's going to go.
Yeah, there will be a lockout.
I'm hoping that they don't come in with something ridiculous, like they want a 40%. I'm hoping they're not looking to cut another 7% off.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big key will be just how fruitful the TV contract is. And then on top of that, how greedy they're going to be because of the new TV contract, right?
The other issue...
It's going to be a much bigger pie to split up, but do they still want more pie?
This is growing in the media, this conversation, at least, I mean, a lot of it's because Denver's so NFL crazy. There's a lot of talk that the problem with the NBA is the guaranteed contracts, and I'm really wondering if eventually the owners are going to make a stab at it.
Maybe.
The NBPA has done a fantastic job, no matter what else has been compromised, of saying, nope, that's off the, like, if you mention losing guaranteed contracts, that's the one thing where they're like, we're out. We're not going to talk to you until this is off the table.
Yeah.
And they need to do that. It's insane to me. It is, honestly, it's disgusting and, in my opinion, slightly immoral for the NFL to support non-guaranteed contracts. It is just disgusting to me.
I mean, from a business standpoint, it's brilliant.
Right.
But it's not always just about business.
There's got to be some measure of ethics that seeps into the construct of business.
Right.
And it's really disgusting. I just can't imagine what those guys put themselves through. Like, NBA players, their time is taken, their bodies are worn, but it's not.
Yeah.
You're not losing years off your life.
Right. It's not the same thing.
What else happened last night? There were good games, you said.
Yeah, the Heat had a loss to the Nets. Chris Bosh threw the ball away. Sean Livingston made the steal. Last second, they were down one.
Why did they trail for most of that game? I didn't watch it.
Pierce went off in the third quarter. That, like, Pierce and Teletovic really did a great job shooting the ball from outside, and LeBron wasn't that active. Like, he took like 13 shots. Bench didn't help all that much. Like, it was just a very lethargic game. Not a lot of pace to it. Not a lot of energy. Nets kind of slowed it down and made it a little ugly.
I'm hoping sometime Pierce will tell us what the reason is that what it is about LeBron James. If they had a conflict when they were younger, when he was younger, whatever it was. Truth, just, he goes ballistic whenever he sees that guy.
Yeah, he really does. It's like he sucks for the majority of the year just so he can save up all of his goodwill and his points and his production for those matchups.
Like, I mean, it really is. Like, it's not, and it's not even a Celtics Heat thing. It really is LeBron.
Yeah.
I guess maybe because he was crowned as like the best small forward in the league early. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Charlotte, that was a big win over Washington.
Ooh, that was in like close game that they just closed out perfectly.
They can close games. That's one of the real impressive things about them.
Yeah, I mean, they extended that lead in the last 5 minutes to double digits pretty quickly, and just it. And you kind of, even with like 3 minutes left, you felt like, oh, this one's over.
Al Jefferson has been worth the money this year.
He is amazing.
Do you know he's making 1.5 more than Peck this year? I thought the gap would have been, I was like, oh, that's like a $5 million gap. It's 1.5 mil.
Peck's got a good agent.
He's got a really good agent.
Or Al Jefferson has a horrible one. It's one of those.
There's only two choices.
Yep. It's one of those outcomes. Should we, you want to do games tonight?
Yeah. Yeah, Jeff Schwartz is his agent.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yep. Right there. So, you know, he's got a good agent.
He's got a very good agent. Oh, well, then surely Kevin Love won't go to L.A. Peck's in Minnesota. See,
no, Al Jefferson is.
Oh, Al Jefferson.
Yeah.
Oh, and he drove those two apart, so he'll drive Love and Peck apart. Yeah, now it makes sense.
It's all coming together.
Yep, now I get it.
All right, Chicago is a 3-point dog at home to Houston.
Oh, nationally televised game. I just wrote a thing about Dwight Howard's redemption, so I will take the Bulls.
Okay, I'm taking the Rockets because I don't think Chicago can score with them. I think that I think the Miami game was their Super Bowl, but
yeah,
overall they're going to have a hard time with these really good teams.
I agree with you. I don't think they can score with them either, but I wrote a glowing thing about Dwight Howard being really good now, one of the best players in the league, and I fully expect that to be thrown out the window tonight.
That just naturally has to happen.
Yep.
Atlanta's favored by 8.5 at home versus Milwaukee.
Oh.
Careful with this one. This one's tricky.
This is tricky. That's a weird one because Atlanta's not that healthy. But I guess Millsap's there. Antic is back. I'm going to say they cover. I'll take Atlanta, but I think it's going to be the nail biter in terms of the spread.
I like Milwaukee. I don't think they'll win, but I think that I think this one could be back and forth for a while.
I'm starting to hop on the Brandon Knight train, by the way.
Oh, I'm so excited!
I'm not quite there yet, but I'm jogging alongside the train as it's moving.
And he plays really sound.
I might do that cool movie thing where I just hop up and there's always that like little bar on the side. I might grab that and, I don't know, look like Cary Grant or something. Cary Grant? Probably not Cary Grant. I'm going to look like some old-timey, maybe Humphrey Bogart. I'm going to look super cool. I'm going to be wearing a trench coat.
With the monocle?
You with the monocle? I'm going to hop up on that train at some point.
Are you upset with the hipster monocle thing?
I'm upset they use such a... Oh, I can't say that. I'm upset they used the picture they used of the guy wearing it because it made it look a lot worse than it is.
Not representative of monocle culture.
No, not at all.
And then finally, all right, let's play the guess the line. Lakers versus Oklahoma City.
Ooh.
In OKC.
In OKC. Jesus. I know I'm going to be too low with it. I'm going to say 15.5.
16 and a half.
Oh, I was so close.
You went 15 and a half and you were low. I'm taking the Lakers because naturally, since I took OKC to cover last time, I'll now overcorrect as the Lakers won and then the Lakers will get blown out. So,
yeah, I'll take the Thunder. I think it's going to be a bloodbath.
I just can't take at this point in the season, honestly, I can't take any team over 12.
Yeah. That's a tough one, especially after the Knicks Sixers debacle.
Injuries, exhaustion, teams just kind of struggling to get through the month of March. March is just I think it's a hard month. The coaches say that it's not. The coach, like Carl, said March 15th is usually when guys start to engage a little bit more. And yeah. Vogel was telling me that after All-Star break is when guys really lock in, which you better hope not. But I still, like, for me, March is the worst month. That's why I'm taking some time off next week and just going to watch the tournament. So
yeah.
So. Okay, man.
Good All luck. Right. I will either talk to you tomorrow or Monday.
Yeah, probably Monday. So, yeah, everyone go watch that Summer Dreams thing. It's awesome.
Summer Dreams, March 15th, Saturday night, 8 p.m., CBS. Thanks, Matt.